This podcast of Left, Right, and Center is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support this free service by September 5th and you could win a Mini Cooper S convertible. Go to KCRW.com for details.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Big labor's big crack-up. Dr. Friss stem cell switcheroo. Plus, does Judy Miller have another secret? Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, columnist for Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, holding down the center here on Left, Right, and Center. Joining me on the left side of the political spectrum from San Francisco today is Robert Scheer, a syndicated columnist based at the L.A. Times. On the right, stepping in for Tony Blankley, who is away today, is our old friend John Fun, columnist for the Wall Street Journal, joining us from New York. Special welcome to you, John Fun.
Thank you.
And in the fourth dimension of political time and space, as always, is our own Arianna Huffington, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. A big week, lots of news. The biggest may have been the crack-up that big labor had. The Service Employees International Union, led by its dynamic leader Andy Stern, along with the Teamsters and what looks like it may be a couple of other unions, have bolted from the AFL-CIO in a bit of labor history this week. The rebels saying that they are frustrated with the kind of same old approach of John Sweeney's AFL-CIO, promising a much more dynamic effort to both organize workers and also work more shrewdly internationally on public policy and more. Obviously, this is sending shockwaves through the labor community, through the Democratic establishment. Some say that CEOs are taking comfort from this. Others say otherwise. Bob Scheer, why don't I start with you? What do you make of what happened with this breakup this week, and what does it mean?
I think it's great. I think competition is good. I think the labor movement was in a better shape when you had a vigorous CIO challenging the old guard of the AFL before the merger. And, you know, you get lazy. The whole idea you're going to rely primarily on electioneering, on lobbying, which is what labor has been doing, I think is a mistake. You have to get out there and organize. You've got to increase the numbers. And if there's going to be a competition, and, for instance, the feeling of service employees and the Teamsters might join forces to organize Federal Express, which has not been organized, and other large companies, Walmart would be another example. More power to them. Let's have some competition and let's put some pressure on the old guard and the AFL to see if they can do the same.
John Fun, what's your take?
Well, in 1995, John Sweeney came in and he said, Republicans have taken control of Congress. I'm going to give it back to the Democrats and then labor's happy days will begin again. That strategy has proven to be, shall we say, seriously lacking. And I think the labor movement would have been much healthier off if they'd had some kind of term limits on union leadership, because John Sweeney is refusing to leave despite the fact that his programs are a failure. Only 8% of American private sector workers now are unionized. Now, admittedly, there's a much better picture in government employment. 36% of government employees are unionized. But that's not a long-term strategy for success or prosperity for the labor movement.
Yeah, I spent about half an hour on the phone with Andy Stern yesterday for a column I'm doing for Fortune, and I think he's one of the most interesting figures, not just on the labor scene, because obviously he's going to become the key person to watch in the years ahead. But I find him exciting just in terms of the potential renewal of the Democratic Party, because he is so he thinks in such a different way than at least the traditional labor leaders I've known. He's so unorthodox on public policy, for example. He's open to, you know, entirely new ways of doing things, not just doing traditional government programs. He thinks differently about the union organizing stuff. I mean, one of his big themes and one of his big frustrations, I think, with Sweeney and the old way of doing things is that they don't approach things on an industry-wide basis. So, for example, he would talk about the airline industry, where clearly the airline industry has huge economic problems. And labor could be a piece of that in terms of trying to figure it out. But, you know, as he describes it, you've got, you know, 10 different unions, some only with one airline, some working, you know, with machinists and pilots and the flight attendants, all separately working over their piece of what is becoming a kind of industrial carcass, as opposed to trying to think systematically about what would it take for the U.S. airline industry to actually succeed and be competitive and in an economically rational way, and then what's labor's piece in that? And if you don't have that kind of thinking, I don't know how you make any progress,
well,
Bob.
This is not a new line of reasoning. The old labor thought the same way in auto, for example. They joined the boards with management. They tried to save the automobile industry. And I don't think it's a black-white situation. Sweeney, in his own union organizing, has been very, very effective. He was part of New Labor. He's also, a good guy. He's been an honest labor leader. Other unions that have not split are also, I mean, for instance, the AFSCME and others that have not joined the split-away movement have a good record of organizing and integrity. I don't think that's the issue. I think it's difficult to organize. We are part of a global market now. There's tremendous pressure, insecurity about jobs, pressure on wages. So I don't think anyone's got the magic bullet. I do hope, though, that the emphasis of the service employees on going after poorer paid workers and going after immigrant workers will galvanize labor. So I'm optimistic about that. But the whole idea of trying to develop a strategy to save these industries, unfortunately, it's still the workers that get screwed at the end of the day, which we've seen with auto.
John and Arianna, I know you want to get in. I'll get you in 1 second. But John Fund, take it where you will.
Well, I agree with you. Andy Stein has a new approach.
Stern.
In fact, Andy Stern has a new approach. He's even has told the New York Times, look, we have to model ourselves after some of the successful groups on the right that have been so good at organizing. And he himself has said that Steve Moore, who until recently ran the Club for Growth committee, is somebody who he's learned a lot from. So I think that Walmart, of course, is going to be a top priority. Also, more government organizing, picking up on some of the successful moves that Miguel Contreras, the late labor organizer in Los Angeles, did. So he's clearly got some new ideas, and I agree with Bob. Competition is something that works in a lot of areas. Why not in labor unions? I guess the next argument we're going to have is whether or not union members should have a say in how those dues are spent at the individual level, and that's what Prop 75, the paycheck protection measure in California, is going to be about. Maybe competition would be a good thing in that area too.
Arianna, I think you guys are sharing a microphone in New York. Is Arianna there?
Oh, no, we're not. We're facing each other in a tiny studio, behaving ourselves. Yeah. I actually think that this is absolutely incredibly important news this week. And if you really want just one number that shows how dysfunctional the union movement had become, here it is. In the last 50 years, union membership went from 35% of working people to 8%. Clearly, something wasn't being done right, however nice a guy John Sweeney may be. It is amazing to me that he would want to continue instead of stepping down, which would have avoided the split. But since he was not willing to do that, since he put his own career ahead of what is best for the labor movement, Andy Stern and the Teamsters did the absolutely right thing by leaving and actually creating a different principle, which is that the primary job is not going to be getting Democratic politicians elected, but organizing more workers. I mean, that is the fundamental split here. And the fact that so much money has been poured down the drain trying to get Democrats elected who will then go and vote for free trade or vote for policies which are against the interests of working people in this country has been one of the problems. They had become a wholly owned subsidiary of the Democratic Party, and Andy Stern is determined to change that. In terms of the Club for Growth that John mentioned, that's a separate issue, and again, it's relevant to the relationship that Stern wants to have with the Democratic Party, which is that the way Steve Moore and the Club for Growth were basically taking on Republicans who are not following what they believed was in the best interest of Republicans, whether you agreed with them or not, on taxes or on anything else. That's what Andy Stern wants to do. If there are Democrats who are going to vote for CAFTA or who are going to not pursue health care policies, then they're going to be targeted in the next election and therefore make it clear that there is a price to pay for not voting in what they see as the interests of the working people.
Now, Bob, I know you wanted to get in on CAFTA, so let's at least spend a minute on that. Arianna, you're against CAFTA then?
Yes, I'm against CAFTA then.
Bob, talk about CAFTA for a second, because I know you thought that was significant this week. That's the Central American Free Trade Agreement that passed this week.
Yes. Let me say, I favor free trade, and I don't know how this became a—
It's our own split on the left here.
I don't know why protectionism is a leftist position. There are plenty of right isolationists who have favored protectionism and fear the foreign. I think— there are plenty of jobs in America that plenty of workers in America will benefit from free trade. I mean, the Boeing workers, for example, sell their airplanes, benefit from free trade. Auto workers, quite a few cars that are sold, parts of cars are imported. So I don't think you can get away from a global economy. And I think in certain industries, for instance, textiles, I suspect that we're not, there is such a thing as comparative advantage. Ariana studied economics at Oxford, I believe, or Cambridge, one of those places. She knows about it. And Americans can't control every single job. And at a certain point in economic development, it may be better to have T-shirts produced in other countries rather than having undocumented workers who are exploited anyway who come here to make T-shirts and then they get their medical care at the emergency room. So there isn't a quick fix on these issues. And I don't think trade should be the test. I think in terms of trade agreements, yes, negotiate protection for workers, not using child labor, not using slave labor, the right to even organize unions. Yes, that would be real as long as you're doing copyright protection and those things. But I don't think the left should be against free trade.
I agree with you.
I do want to throw one other thing in here. I don't think you should make this glorification of one labor, Andy Stern, as if no one else has done anything. John Sweeney, by the way, has been a very effective organizer. He's had a very strong union. He knows how to organize people. And there's a reason, by the way, you want to have some political clout, because those laws that get passed in Congress can make it very difficult to organize, as we've learned going back to Taft-Hartley debate.
Bob, and that political clout has been demonstrated in Congress on what issue recently?
Well, that's the problem. They haven't been successful. I'm not going to deny that. And by the way, I began by saying they ought to have a split, and they certainly ought not to be a rubber stamp for the Democratic Party. I agree with Ariana on that. But I don't think they can bow out of the electorate. And to blame, by the way, the 50-year decline on John Sweeney, when he represented New Labor, he was against the old guard. That's how he got in. You can't blame him for that. And you also should not just talk about the private sector jobs. I think it's very important that government, where unions were not even allowed to organize for much of our history, where the unions are so strong in the public sector, and the public sector is an important part of our economy, that has been a great victory for labor and a great victory for those workers in those industries.
But it's not as relevant, which is because the role of the union, which I think Stern understands, is to try and figure out how to make a society that rewards work in the context of economic entities that are healthy and that are part of a globally competitive U.S. Economy. So where I hope, and we got a break in a sec, but where things like the CAFTA and the trade debate go is that people like Stern, while they may not, where they may not be where Bob and I are on trade today, understand that if we had health coverage for every American, so the people who lost their jobs from trade also didn't, weren't then going to the poorhouse for their medical bills, and if there was some kind of way to make sure that we had a living minimum wage the Fed subsidized, and a whole host of things that government can do, and that even conservatives, John, could come to embrace as part of what keeps a political consensus for open markets and technological change, ought to be the way. We need to take a break. Up ahead, Bill Friss, flip-flop on stem cells, plus Judy Miller's other secret. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller in the center. Bob Scheer is in San Francisco on the left. John Fund, special guest John Fund, Wall Street Journal columnist, sitting in for Tony Blankley on the right from New York, across the table from Ariana Huffington, who was also in New York today. Big news as we went to air, which is that Bill Frist broke with President Bush and threw his support behind House-passed legislation to expand federal financing for human embryonic stem cell research, breaking with religious conservatives. People are already saying this could impact his prospects for seeking the White House in 2008. What Frist said, it's not just a matter of faith, it's a matter of science, he said. John Fund is our in-house conservative today. What does this mean? Do you? I didn't know where. I'm not sure where you are on this issue, but where are you? Are you applauding or decrying Frist, and what does it mean?
Well, there are two impacts from this. One, of course, would be, I think, philosophical, and one would be political. Clearly, the legislation that passed the House overwhelmingly was going to pass the Senate. So I think, as a practical person, Bill Frist was getting away from being run over by the train. Secondly, I think this gives him a mini McCain moment. He will be celebrated for his independence and his ability to use his medical background to see things clearly. And politically, I don't think it costs him that much in the 2008 presidential race for two reasons. One, there's an awful lot of real estate to the right of him. There'll be Sam Brownback. There'll be George Allen. There'll be lots of people staking out a more conservative position on stem cells. Hmm. Secondly, 3 years from now, I suspect that stem cells will not be a major player in the 2008 elections. There'll be other issues that it will have intruded. And I have to tell you, you know, on this issue, there are some people who feel very passionately about it because they have children or relatives who are suffering from dread diseases. But the vast majority of Americans don't know a whole lot about the stem cell debate. In fact, I have run into very educated people who think stem cells have something to do with the stem of your backbone.
I love that mini McCain moment. And also, if he's using – what's nice is if he's using his medical background in a way that tilts in the direction he's just done, maybe help inoculate him against the video diagnosis of Terry Schiavo. Bob, what do you make of Frist's move?
Yeah, I was just thinking that myself. this was the biggest baggage because here's a man of science who betrayed. He betrayed his whole education. He betrayed his background.
Now he's back.
Yeah, but he really did a hack political thing and doing what no doctor should be ever allow himself to do, which is make contradict the work of other specialists without even observing the patient. I do think the lesson here is don't cross Nancy Reagan if you want to be a Republican. She has led a fierce and effective campaign, and I think a good one. Secret admirer of Nancy Reagan. I always thought she was never the right winger that she was pictured as. And, you know, here's a victory for science and common sense, and let's applaud it.
Ariana?
Well, actually, I think the mini McCain moment is the key here because, as Tony Blankley had said on our show a few weeks ago, the right was kind of turning on Frist. I mean, I've been hearing a lot of people just not seeing him as the big white hope for conservatives in 2008. They're trying to see who they would rally around. It's clear that McCain will be running. And so where does that leave Frist? If he's going to lose the hardcore conservatives, and as John said, there are others who are going to get that support, like Brownback or Allen. Where is he going? He definitely had to do something to erase that memory of the Schiavo diagnosis and to actually position himself in the run against McCain.
It'd be nice to know if you sort of what the secret conversations are like. Because first of all, I know a professor, there's an economics professor named Uwe Reinhardt at Princeton who was one of his mentors when he was there, whenever it was, 25, 30 years ago, who I think would say that everyone thought Bill Frist was a Democrat. And people thought that when he got into public life at first, wherever it was, 10 years ago. And with health care, clearly is going to be the central domestic issue in the 2008 presidential campaign. I mean, I agree with you. He couldn't let the Schiavo thing stand as what his sort of most notable health care policy pronouncement in the public eye had been. And yet, on the other hand, he is very credible in a general election sense for being someone who could understand how to reform American healthcare, John. I mean, isn't this – if the Democrats are going to be going big on this, I know a lot of Republicans who think McCain and Frist, all of them, because the issue has reached such – you know, the cost spiral and the uninsured are reaching such gigantic proportions, and because Bush has not made this a priority at all, it's going to just simmer and really be ripe for national attention in 08. He has a chance to be a leader on this.
He's very bright. But I will have to tell you, I've heard speeches of his recently, heard reports of speeches he gave. He does not have a grand system for opening up health insurance to everyone, getting rid of state mandates, or on the other hand, having national health insurance. What he likes to talk about are the risks to this country from bioterrorism, from avian bird disease, from diseases crossing from animals to humans. To listen to Bill for a speech on health care issues is to frankly want to slit your wrists. Now, those are all extremely important issues. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, running for president, I can give you a list of the presidential candidates who have given very dour, you know, direct messages. Remember Walter Mondale, I'm going to raise your taxes. Remember Michael Dukakis, you know, I'm going to give you Swedish land planning. I mean, this doesn't work in a presidential campaign. So I think Bill Frist is going to have to come up with a new script if he wants to take advantage of what you think will be the central domestic issue, health care, because his message right now may be very important, but it doesn't sell in Iowa.
Spoken like a well-insured conservative, John. Go ahead, Arianna.
But also the kind of contempt that John is demonstrating towards Bill Frist is what I hear from all my conservative friends. It is absolutely unbelievable. So Frist must have heard it too.
I said he was brilliant. And I said that he could have an interesting message.
Slitting your wrists, I think, is as dramatic a pronouncement about a candidate as you could make.
His presentation.
Well, presentation is about 90% of being a presidential candidate.
Have you been excited by Bill Frist speeches, Arianna? Have you?
No, but then he's not my guy.
Well,
so the point is that he clearly felt himself that he needed some kind of reinventing. And this moment was a reinvention moment. There he is on the front pages and all over the cable news, doing supposedly the right thing for science.
Well, we'll obviously be watching this in the months ahead. On the Plaingate front, which we don't want to leave track of, this is the Karl Rove story with the White House that everyone is following. I know, Arianna, you had an interesting post this week. Tell us about where you picked it up and what your suspicion is about what Judy Miller may also know.
Well, when I got back from Italy in New York, I've heard from various friends of mine working at the New York Times that the halls are buzzing about Judy Miller, and John is nodding his head here. And the official pronouncements by Bill Keller, and the fact that I heard this morning that her prison visiting date book is filled until September 15, only belie the fact that there is tremendous sense of embarrassment in the New York Times and anger at the fact that the paper is sort of standing by her and using all those kind of martyrdom-like phrases to describe her, when apparently, from what I have heard, she was the one who was given the name of Plame from the DIA source, not the CIA source, but the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency. And that followed the fact that when she read Joe Wilson's piece, she went absolutely ballistic, because there was Joe Wilson in the pages of her own newspaper, basically discrediting indirectly her, as well as all those who had puffed up all those claims about WMD and nuclear weapons and all that. And she got really mad and got that information, had breakfast with Libby in Washington. And although
Scooter Libby, the vice president's chief of staff, right?
Mm-hmm. So all that is going on. I mean, I would imagine that Bill Keller must know that. So what are the high brass at the New York Times doing, sort of standing by her, when at some point all that is going to come out? And then on top of it, what I blogged about on Friday is what she was doing in Iraq, you know, when she was embedded in more ways than one, maybe, in that unit that was searching for WMD that they never found, it, and practically hijacked the unit, according to military officials speaking off the record, and had this special relationship with Gonzalez, who was heading the unit. And what was all of that about? This is so incredibly unethical in journalistic terms, leaving aside the leaks. Why are the New York Times, after everything they've been through with Jason Blair, standing by somebody who is acting in such incredibly sort of distorted ways when it comes to journalism?
Now, because of the high standards of proof we have journalistically on Left, Right, and Center, do we qualify these, Arianna, as sort of confirmed rumors at this point?
Well, let me just say one thing that I haven't even blogged about yet, which is that she was actually bragging to some friends in the New York Times about her relationship with Gonzalez, and actually emailed a picture of Gonzalez with the words on it, "Lucky lady." So clearly, there are a lot of people there who know what was going on, and a lot of them are upset with the way their paper is treating her.
John? Well, first of all, coming from the Wall Street Journal, I can say we're very lucky that we cover money and not sex. But this does go to a larger question, which is
Oh, come on, stay with a little question first.
Media outlets do a horrible job covering any story of which they are an integral part. Mm-hmm. And almost everything that has been reported on this case in major outlets has either been irrelevant, misdirected, or beside the point. And some of what Ariana says goes to that. For example, what if this is not about outing an undercover agent who probably didn't qualify under the law anyway, and perhaps it was even left on the list improperly? What if this is about perjury? And what if it's about perjury by someone in the journalistic community? Or what if it's about perjury, yes, possibly someone in the White House, but possibly someone in the State Department who's considered a good guy? Or somebody in the CIA who started all of this by making the referral to the Justice Department? This story is going to be very complex, and I'll make one prediction. In the end, there will be a lot of surprises here, and it will be a completely different story than what we thought out, started out thinking it was.
Just about 30 seconds, Bob, before we need to rant. What's your...
Well, at the risk of being the politically correct one here, I can't giggle about someone being in jail. I've been as critical of Judy Miller's reporting, terrible reporting on WBs as anyone, but unfortunately the prosecutor has put her in a position where I think she deserves sympathy. She is in jail. It's not fun. There is a principle here of not forcing people to give out their sources. And so for the time being, I'm on her side of the case, and I wish that she would be allowed to go home, and then we could seriously debate the subject.
We have reached that time once again for our famed end of show, Left, Right, and Center Rant, featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Special guest John Fun, about 20 seconds or so. It is your soapbox.
A lot of Americans supported passage of the Patriot Act in 2001. A lot of them support the renewal this year. However, they also, I think a lot of people, were expecting that Congress would extend the sunset clauses that say that the Patriot Act eventually goes away if it's no longer needed. Well, the House of Representatives last week voted to extend the Patriot Act, but in 14 of the 16 categories, they got rid of the sunset. The Patriot Act is permanent. I think this is a concession that the war on terror will never end. This will go on forever. And I think it is, I think, destructive of civil liberties, and I think something that I think the people who voted for the Patriot Act in 2001 probably would be surprised to see.
About 15 seconds. Ariana Huffington.
Well, just very quickly, what Bob said about protecting our sources as journalists is not at all the case with Judith Miller, because, first of all, her source had given her permission, and secondly, her source was either herself, or if you don't believe that, her source was undermining the public interest. So basically what she's doing by taking that stand is kind of corrupting what the First Amendment really means.
15 seconds. Bob Scheer.
I just want to applaud John Fund, finally, a conservative who cares about civil liberties and is willing to be consistent even when Republicans are jeopardizing civil liberties. So my hat's off to you.
As a last note, back to Andy Stern, and in the spirit of John Fund's search for more exciting leaders, keep your eye on Andy Stern. I was at a thing a few months ago in L.A. where I heard Evan Bayh give his kind of classic stump speech looking to 2008, and then at a small dinner that Ariana was at with Andy Stern, and the difference between the kind of stale, old, robotic talking points and someone rolling up their sleeves saying, how are we going to renew the country, reward work, and make a progressive agenda a majority is stunning and something to be watched. But that's all the progressivity we have time to watch today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to Bob Scheer, Ariana Huffington, and our special guest, John Fun from the Wall Street Journal. Sarah Spitz produced today's program. Our technical director is Ray Guarna and engineer David Green at KCRW. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
If you like pajamas,
pajamas.
I'll wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
But we
know we need each other, so we better call the calling of love.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.